Learn how to deliver a memorable and compelling pitch with Michelle Messina and Jonathan Baer.
Good morning. Thanks for coming in today. I am CEO and founder of Explora International. We do a lot of work around the world working with startups, helping them to understand how to get clear on their business fundamentals, how to present their content, and then how they can use their personality and their passion and their style to communicate their message more effectively. John and I have worked together about 9 years. We spent a year and a half in a room writing this book, and we haven't killed each other yet.
There is blood scattered throughout the book, however.
We do a lot of work in countries all around the world, and we actually spend more time working together outside of Silicon Valley than we do inside of Silicon Valley. My background is all around in sales, marketing, and business development. I've been in the tech space for quite a long time with public and private companies, helping companies to establish new markets, new categories of products, that sort of thing. And we started working together about 9 years ago.
Good. So I'm John Baer. I'm covering venture capitalists. So what does that mean? It means I used to invest. I don't anymore. I spend my time working with startups all over the world, training entrepreneurs, helping them with pitches, helping train mentors and early stage investors, and spending a lot of time working with Michelle. I'm also a serial entrepreneur. I was the founder of 2 venture-backed companies. So for all of you who are looking to start a company, I know your pain. I know the challenges. And one of the things that where I add value is the fact that I've been on the investor side. So I come with a bit of an investor mindset because investors look at the world a little differently. And I'm not going to tell you that's right or wrong. It's just different. So with that, let's go and through the presentation.
So you guys all know who this is. This is Steve Jobs, the late CEO and founder of Apple. And one of the things that he had within him was the ability to tell a great story. And he captivated people with products, with opportunities, and just really excellent at communicating his message. But he also took drama and theater classes to become really effective at that. And so storytelling here in Silicon Valley is really important. People love to hear a good story, right? You guys sitting around drinking beers, eating dinner with people, and somebody says, let me tell you this story, right? Isn't that fun when they kind of give you this whole story of their life or something that happens? So storytelling is a really important part of the human connection and the way that we connect our business to our prospective partners, our customers, and our investors.
Okay. And storytelling is good when it's done well, and when it's done badly, it's really awful. And I'm sure all of you know about bad stories that go on for like an hour, saying, you know, get to the point already. But as you think about telling a story has a beginning, a middle, and the end, and it's interesting. And so as you think about the story you're going to tell, make sure it's short, make sure it's interesting, and most importantly, make sure it's factual, right? So storytelling in the sense of telling the story about your business is nonfiction. We've seen a lot of stories of people telling stories that have no basis in truth. That doesn't work.
So we've listened to, just in the last couple of years, probably about 5,000 startup pitches. So we've kind of heard a lot of things that work really well and things that don't work really well. So we're going to give you kind of the sense of sort of the do's and don'ts today. But one of the most important things is the fact that people get lost. I'm giving you the eye so you will change the slide.
Oh, she's giving me the eye, so I'm changing the slide.
I'm giving you the eye. So,
all right.
So he and I worked together a long time. And
for all of you here, when you think I should be changing the slide and I haven't figured it out, just raise your hand, okay? Just keep me honest, because otherwise she hurts me.
Haven't drawn blood yet.
Right? Yet.
So the problem with a lot of pitches, whether they be 2-minute, 5-minute, 15, 20 investor pitches or whatever, is that the story that's being told doesn't have a beginning, a middle, and an end. And people get really lost in their product, right? They spend more time talking about the product than they do about the business.
Right.
So this is probably one of the biggest issues that we see with people presenting their business, regardless of how long it is, whether it's a 1-minute elevator pitch or 20-minute customer pitch.
And one of the ways people sometimes get lost is they give really high level, what we call the 50,000-foot level, and then suddenly they're like a plane that's really in trouble. It goes all the way down in the weeds, and you're giving people all this detail. And then all of a sudden, you're back up, and you're talking at the 50,000-foot level and the concept level. And I will tell you, from an audience point of view, That's an easy way to get people lost. It's sort of like the roller coaster ride. You get dizzy after a while.
So when we're listening to pitches, we're sort of looking for certain pieces of information, certain patterns in the business, certain patterns in the communication and that sort of thing. But I'll tell you, this is one of the biggest problems that we see is getting lost in the whole story. And the second thing that we see is a very broad or very general approach to who their customer is. And we just heard this a couple of days ago. Somebody said, well, everybody's my customer. And this is kind of like, well,
that's how I make sure I have a big market. Everybody's
right, exactly.
going to buy it.
Everybody's
right?
your customer, right?
Right, absolutely.
So if everybody's your customer, our premise is that nobody's your customer. Because if you think everybody's your customer, you're not doing a good job in tailoring your message to the specific needs of that customer. So they don't resonate. The words that you say, the things that are on your slides don't resonate because they're too broad or too general.
And that doesn't mean over time you can't have a big market and have lots of different kinds of businesses, customers buying your product. But let me give you an example. A number of years ago, Michelle and I met an entrepreneur in...
He's going to do this. He's going to look at me and ask me to read his mind
She should know this. All right. It was in Bogota, Colombia. And
go.
This entrepreneur said, I have got the replacement for Facebook. Now, we love big, audacious goals. We said, great. So who are the first customers you're going to target? Because for those of you who know the story of Facebook or watched the movie, Facebook initially started at Harvard. It went to a couple of the Ivy League schools. And over time, it broadened itself as a company for a lot of good reasons. And of course, this entrepreneur said, well, everybody's my customer. Well, that doesn't work. It doesn't work from an investor point of view. It doesn't work from a, how do you identify a core market of customers, of people who are going to use your product and service, and then you scale from there. And that applies on a business-to-business kind of opportunity, as well as business-to-consumer kind of startup.
And even to the point last night, I read a one-page summary of a company, and he says, well, all large agricultural and food producers are my customers. And I thought to myself, well, that's a pretty big market. There's 500 million farmers in the world, and there's hundreds of millions of food suppliers. So how do you get more narrow, more granular, so that your product description makes sense to me in relation to the target market that you're going after? So it can't be that broad. It has to be much more specific, at least initially.
Right. And I will tell you, for all of you who are thinking about how do you get your second customer, we'll talk later about how you get your first customer. You know how you get your second customer? Your second customer looks just like your first customer. That's the easiest way for you to find, sell, and close your second customer. And that's part of the reason we talk about being very targeted.
One big mistake that people make is spending a lot of time talking about the product rather than the business. So you've probably seen this cartoon before. The company, what they heard was that the customer wanted a swing with three tiers. The project leader understood it this way. The engineer designed it that way. The programmer wrote it this way. You know, when you go all the way through it, all the customer really wanted was a tire swing, okay? So the issue is in communicating your message out to the market is spending more time talking about the product and all the cool stuff that's associated with the product rather than talking about the business. Because here you're in Silicon Valley, if you're trying to raise capital, you got to be talking about the business. Yes, the product is part of that, but you can't be spending all your time talking about the product. And we hear a lot of people do that, don't we?
We hear a lot of people. I mean, investors invest in businesses. Yes, it's good that you have technology. Sometimes it's critical you have technology, critical that you have proprietary technology. And yes, they care about the product, but ultimately they're investing in a business. And they are investing other people's money, and they are looking to make money.
So if you can't communicate, you're not going to be able to fight your way out of the paper bag, so to speak. And we've had a lot of entrepreneurs that have been super nervous in their presentation skills. Their message was all convoluted and mixed up. They didn't have confidence when they came out to present, whether on stage or in a meetup. So if you can't get your message out there clearly, you can't network in Silicon Valley effectively. And everything that gets done here in Silicon Valley is through all the connections that you make.
Right. And so being thoughtful about how you present yourself, your company, and being very clear and succinct about that is absolutely critical. And also when you meet people, being very clear as to what you want. I mean, I meet people all the time, and at the end of the conversation, I'm trying to figure out, so what do they want? What are they looking to do? Are they looking for me to help them find capital? Are they looking, what is it they want? And sometimes it's unclear. So be very clear with people when you meet them, but don't ambush them.
This is a big challenge for a lot of people. How many of you guys have trouble getting to the right people that can help you make decisions, help you sell product, whatever it is? This is a challenge for people in Silicon Valley. And in reality, we've gotten a little bit better at it over the years, but part of it has to do with understanding what benefit or value the other person's going to get out of meeting with me, taking my phone call, reading my email, et cetera. So the ability to communicate, regardless of the method of communication, is really important, because everything that gets done here is on the basis of who you know and how you're connected.
Right. But being thoughtful about who it is you want to meet is also important. I meet entrepreneurs all the time and they say, I want to meet an investor. I want to meet a venture capitalist.
Oh, wait, I want to meet Eric Schmidt.
Oh, you want to meet Eric Schmidt? What time today?
Yeah. So we have had people ask us.
And I want to take both cases because they're both important. First of all, if you want to meet an investor, it's not a question of meeting an investor. It's meeting the right investor. And the fit really matters. In the same way, if you want to meet the people at Google, people have said to us, well, I want to sit down with Larry and Sergey because I want to go over our product roadmap. And this is a two-person international company. And we say to them, number one, I'm not sure we have Eric or Larry on speed dial and their schedules are very busy, but what's in it for them? And those are important questions. Not only who do you talk to, but are you talking to the right person, the right level in the organization, and why do they want to spend time with you? And that's a critical question. Yes, you're getting a deal with IBM or Apple or Microsoft or Google is a great thing for you, but what's in it for them? And that's the question that entrepreneurs often don't ask and answer.
How many of you guys are having trouble getting meetings with the right people? Oh, you guys are doing better than I am then. Okay, there's some hands that went up. So this is a big challenge for a lot of people. And if you are having problems getting meetings, I would suggest you sit down and maybe with somebody from the outside and assess, what are you communicating to them? And can it be communicated in a more effective way? Whether it's an email, whether it's a voicemail. Any of you guys still use the phone for a voicemail?
What's that?
Yeah, right. I was in enterprise sales for a long time, and we were selling a couple $100,000 deals. And a lot of what I used to do was, at the end of the day, catch executives at their desk. So after 5:30 or 6 o'clock their time, usually you could find them answering their own phones. And I was selling into large corporations, so they still use the old landlines. But using methodologies like that to get your message across, it's important. But my point is, if you're not getting meetings, you might want to consider sitting down with somebody who's kind of outside your organization, can give you a fresh perspective to review what you're saying in your emails, in your phone calls, in your networking, in your one-minute pitch.
Right. I mean, and there are a couple things. One is, some people, it's easier to get a hold of them at a conference or event. Other people, reaching out to them through an introduction, other people, you're ultimately going to be better off reaching them through phone or text or things like that. And so being thoughtful about who you go to, thinking about how you reach them. I mean, very often I say to entrepreneurs, if you're in the fintech sector, go to a conference, go to an event. You are more likely to meet investors, corporations who have interests. It's a self-selecting audience. Make your life easy. Now, recognize that if you go to those events, people are typically going to be more accessible at those kinds of events. But when you get back to the office and you try calling them, it's still may be hard to get a hold of them. So making the right impression, making sure that you're clear in your communication, all of those things ultimately help you in not only getting to the right people, but then making something happen as a result.
Understanding who you're talking to is really important as well, because if you've only been in the sales mode of selling your product to corporations, for example, that message that you communicate to a customer is going to be different than the message you communicate to your investor. So you've got to be looking at who your audience is and what are the pieces of information that they're going to be interested in hearing. And you've got to tailor your presentation. So it's not just about one corporate slide deck. It's about slide deck or presentation, depending on who the audience is.
And I will tell you, I've heard entrepreneurs put together a slide deck, and it's like e-commerce 101. right?
They have an e-commerce 101.
E-commerce 101. So they go in and they're explaining to an investor what e-commerce is, how big the market is, why this is a good opportunity. And you shake your head and say, wait a minute. You presumably are going to an investor who likes e-commerce opportunities, presumably has it invested in e-commerce businesses. Why are you giving them a basic course on e-commerce? You're wasting your time. It is mildly insulting, and it's not going to get you what you need. So now, there are other people that you may make a presentation to where you need to explain something or explain why you're different. So there are 50 companies, there are 5,000 companies out there doing e-commerce. We do e-commerce a little differently, and I'd like to explain to you the difference. That's great. But don't tell me about the history of e-commerce or why Amazon is such a great company or why you're going to beat Amazon, right? And so being thoughtful about what you're presenting, who your audience is, what basis of knowledge you've got to assume people have, and that will make a big difference.
So we're going to talk a little bit about being a good presenter and some of the things that I think are the biggest mistakes that we see, and then we'll give you some tips and tricks for how to be more effective.
Right. And being a great presenter is not something that most of us mere mortals do naturally. Getting up and presenting is uncomfortable. Getting up and doing that in front of two people, in front of 50 people, in front of 5,000 people is something that is a learned skill, and you learn it by doing it. So for all of you who said, well, I'm not a good presenter, guess what? Most people aren't, but you learn how to present by practice.
So we sort of summarized a lot of the problems and issues that we find in the presentations that we see. And we wrote a little bit about this in the book because these are some of the sort of systemic issues that we're seeing over and over again. Title slide. Title slide's not complete. So for example, let's say I had 3 minutes to pitch and there was 3 to 5 minutes between the prior presenter and me. I would want to make sure that on my title slide, it not only showed my company name, the logo, and my contact information, but I would also want it to show the tagline of the company or what we do. Because I'm basically trying to use the time that's not allotted to me exactly as time to sort of start creating a little bit of a space in the mind of the audience about what we do. So my time has not started to get on stage yet, but I want to use the time I'm walking up to stage to have my information be communicated already. So when we say incomplete, it means it doesn't always have a tagline on it. So what you do, who you are, your logo, contact information, all that kind of stuff, put all that on your slide, but make sure you have a tagline or a descriptor of what the company does.
Okay. The next biggest mistake people make is they don't tell the audience up front why they're here presenting. If you're here to raise capital, tell me you're raising capital. If you're raising capital, tell me up front how much capital you're looking to raise. Don't leave it as a big surprise to the end, because what happens with investors is they are self-selecting. If I have a very large fund and do later stage investments, and you are a very early stage company looking to raise $50,000 or $100,000, $1 million, I'm going to tune out, and vice versa. And so if you don't tell me up front, I'm probably not going to have a lot of interest in what you're doing. So make it easy for the investor.
And number three, what the company does is not stated. That ties in a little bit to the first one with respect to a descriptor about your company on your first slide.
But I think it goes beyond that as well. Particularly for an investor, investors want to be able to pigeonhole you. They want to understand what it is you do. You're a mobile company doing payments. You're an app for this. Just give me a little bit of information so I understand, before you go into a lot of detail, sort of what kind of business you are. Are you selling product? Are you selling service? Are you an app? Are you an enterprise software? Again, make it easy for your audience to frame what they're going to hear from you next.
The fourth one is John's favorite, is like, whatever's on the slide does not have anything to do with what's coming out of the person's mouth, okay? So there's a bunch of stuff up there, but there's a bunch of blah, blah, blah coming out here, and there's just a complete mismatch and disconnect between what's happening there and what's happening here. And that's either a case of the presenter got diverted onto something, the presenter didn't understand their audience and has not tailored the information for the audience, or they just need more training and rehearsal.
Or what we see happen very often is somebody gets up, presents, and they forget to move the slides forward. So they're talking about slide number 4, and it's still showing the title slide. And that's an easy mistake to make. I will probably make it sometime today, but that's why Michelle is close enough that she can kick me when I manage to do that. So the next one we've talked about a little bit, understanding who your market is, who your initial target market or customer is. Because it's great to wave your arms and talk about how big the overall market is, but people also care about how are you going to get initial traction and who is in that profile for your initial market traction.
When you get to the team slide, a lot of times there's either too much detail about the team or not enough detail. So when there's not enough detail, it's maybe just a few names and a few photographs of people. And so we have no idea what their experience or their background is. Or if it's too much detail, it's a sort of a biography of each person with respect to, you know, where they graduated, who they worked for, they've done research on XYZ subjects. So there's got to be a balance between how much team information is presented. And what investors are looking for is a little bit of understanding as to whether or not the team understands the domain or the space that they're working in. So did they have prior experience working for a company that is targeting that space, or did they work for a company where they identified there was a gap in the market, which is why they started their company in the first place? Do they have relevant experience doing successful implementations, getting product traction, you know, building a startup, scaling the company, getting customers? They're looking for not just domain expertise, but ability to execute.
And finally, they're also looking at, have the people worked together before? Because it's much easier to be successful when you have worked with other people or have complementary backgrounds and skills.
A lot of people think the reason companies split up is because the founders don't get along. But based on all the research we looked at for the book, it really has to do more with product market fit is one of the biggest reasons that companies fail, not founder issues.
Right. So very often people talk about their business and it's unclear why anybody would buy the product. And we talk about this as the pain point. What problem are you solving? What pain does your customer, your market have that you're looking to solve? And in addition to understanding the pain point, as an investor, I want to know what the economic cost is of that pain. Because if it's just something that, okay, it's an annoyance, that's one thing. If it has real economic cost, then I care about it more because that means you can make money. And remember, as an investor, I'm looking at companies. I love technology. I love products. But I'm interested in building a business that makes a lot of money.
So value proposition snaps right into that, because when you talk about value proposition, value means an exchange of value on both sides. For whatever you're paying for the product, you're getting this in return. Just like your cell phone bill, you pay this to get access to all your friends, have, you know, texting capabilities and check your Facebook page. That's the value exchange there between you and your cell phone provider. So when we're looking at value proposition, it's basically back to the same thing. What is the pain point the customer has and how are you delivering value or filling that gap for them? And a lot of times we find that the value is not clearly articulated either in the slides, the one pager, the company website, or in a verbal presentation. So value proposition and pain point, they're inextricably linked.
Yep. So business model not clear. Well, that's part of it. Very often people are not clear on how they make money. But it goes beyond that. Sometimes we meet companies who have 5 different ways they're making money. Right? They're charging a monthly fee. They're charging for specific implementation services. They're charging, they're generating revenue for advertising.
For transactions.
Yeah, you know, they're doing all sorts of things. Way too complicated. For an early stage company, as an investor, I want to know, where's 80% of your revenue coming from? Because early on, you can't possibly do all those things. So don't do that. The other problem we see is very often people say, oh, so we charge, you know, $2 a month. They may want to invest in a business that charges its customers $2 a month. It doesn't sound good. Now, $24 a year, that sounds better. $1 a transaction doesn't sound very appealing. Oh, by the way, we do 1 million transactions a month. So how you talk about your business model what the average transaction size is for your customer or per account is another way that you're going to convey information in a much more interesting and compelling manner. And again, you're not lying, but how you present the information, you'll get a very different reaction. I'm going to invest in the company that's doing $1 million a month in transactions. I am less inclined to even have initial interest in a company that's charging $1 a transaction.
So context is really important when you talk about your business model. Competitive differentiation. A lot of times companies will do their pitch, for example, in a 3 or 5 minute scenario, and they skip over the competitive differentiation, or they spend too much time on going feature by feature comparison about their product versus another product. And most people don't want that level of detail, at least on the initial presentation, and it's actually too much detail.
We call those eye charts, like so you go to the eye doctor and, you know, read this line and read that line. It works against you. So if you go feature by feature, that is going to work against you because an investor doesn't care about features. They care about your competitive positioning.
Right. And so we're talking about differentiation in relation to every other solution on the market. Okay. We're not talking about, well, we have 3 and they have 2. We're not talking that level of granularity when we talk about competitive differentiation, at least on a short pitch of 5 or 10 minutes.
Okay. Go to market plan incomplete. How are you going to get to customers? How are you going to get to customers day 1? How are you going to get to customers day 5, day 10, you know, 3 months, 6 months, a year out? And very often people have not thought it through and they don't understand the economics of that either. It's one thing to say, look, initially we're going to be selling directly, but that may not scale. That may be only a starting point until you get enough market traction where you can look at other ways to sell, whether it's an inside sales, telemarketing, whether you're using a distributor or another channel of distribution. But being thoughtful about how do you get customers is really critical.
So when you say thoughtful, if I'm selling a $250,000 product to enterprises, if I have a one-to-one direct sales force, that might make sense.
Might.
Okay. But if I'm selling a product that basically the annual value of that to my customer is $500, it doesn't make sense for me to have 20 salespeople calling on customers to sell them something that's of value.
Oh, it makes perfect sense if you want to lose money. It's hard to imagine you can make that model work. And it's the price of your product. It's the cost of your channel of distribution. It's how long your sales cycle is that matters. But the rules of thumb are usually pretty accurate, that if you're selling a product for less than $250,000 on an annual basis or $250,000 sale, it's hard to justify a direct sales organization.
Right. What about market understanding?
We meet people all the time who either starting a business here, have started a business elsewhere, and are looking at the U.S. market, and very often their understanding of the market, how it really works, how you get customers, what the market structure is lacking. And when I talk to other investors, particularly for companies who are outside of Silicon Valley, looking to sell into Silicon Valley, that's one of their big issues. People come, they haven't done their homework. So my recommendation is do your homework. You know, when we meet companies and work with companies from outside of Silicon Valley who are looking to sell in to customers, Silicon Valley, the U.S., we say step number 1 is to spend the first month, 2, 3 doing market validation. What does market validation mean? Is you go not to sell, but to talk to people you believe are in your target market to get feedback. What do they think? Does the product fit? Have you identified the right customer set for your particular product?
And what are going to be the behavior aspects that are going to force them to make one decision over the other? How do they think? What are their preferences, their beliefs, their attitudes, et cetera, that is going to drive their behavior and affect your traction you get in the marketplace? The last thing on this slide, we talked a little bit about failure to tailor to an audience. The point I'll leave you with on this one is that if you don't understand your audience, it's going to be hard for you to communicate something compelling and interesting that keeps them engaged and wants them to have a meeting with you later. So you've got to make sure you understand who your audience is. So you guys all know who Guy Kawasaki is? This is his rule of thumb, is 10, 20, 30. So 10 slides, 20 minutes to present, and a 30-point font, okay? So I would say the header of that slide is probably 36 to 40-point font, where it says a good rule. So you've got to have slides that are big, easy to absorb visually, and that doesn't make your audience spend a lot of time looking at a bunch of charts and data and things like that that are going to confuse them. Because your audience needs to be paying attention to you more than anything else. Your slides should just be supporting what you're saying.
And we sometimes see entrepreneurs who have six different graphs and tables on the same slide. Don't
yes,
do that.
Very recently.
Please do not do that. It's too confusing. It doesn't work. Because you start talking about that slide and people don't know where to start. They have no idea where they should be focusing.
So make it easy for your audience to follow where you're at. So we're kind of touching on this stuff, but you know, what's the right pitch? What's the reason that you're pitching? Okay. Are you pitching to a customer and you want to engage them in moving to the next step, which is a meeting to perhaps trial the product or bring more people into the discussion? Are you pitching to an investor with the idea of securing another meeting with that a potential investor? You've got to figure out what your pitch is, what the reason for it is. And our rule of thumb is sort of 80% should be around the business and 20% should be around the product.
And your presentation should be tailored for the objective. And Silicon Valley now has all these different tags for what your presentation is. Right? An elevator pitch, an informational pitch, an investor pitch, and a customer partner pitch. And really, they are different in terms of objective. They're different in terms of length. But the most important thing is to figure out which it is that you should be presenting. I'll give you a hint. If you have 30 seconds to tell people about your business, don't go into your 5-minute talk and talk very quickly. It doesn't work. And unfortunately, very often that's what people do. And it's good that you can talk quickly, but people cannot listen and absorb all of that quickly.
Right. It is possible to do a 5-minute pitch with 10 slides. If you've rehearsed it well, you have a good story, your slides don't require a lot of work from the audience to read through and decipher the graphs and figure out why and what and things like that. So it is possible to do a really quality, very polished 5-minute pitch with 10 slides. But you have to look at the content of those slides. You have to make sure that your story flows, meaning a beginning, a middle, and an end. Okay. And you've got to be able to ensure that you recall what are the key points you're going to reinforce based on who's in the audience. So how many of you guys go to meetups? All of us need to go to meetups on a regular basis, because if we don't go to meetups, we don't continue to extend our network, build our contacts, find new opportunities. We have to go to meetups. So we have to become effective at communicating our message to somebody. The idea was that somebody got on an elevator, and it was the CEO of IBM who was on the elevator. And the concept came with, you've got basically 30 to 60 seconds before the elevator reaches the top. What are you going to say to that person to make it interesting and compelling for them to say, hey, why don't you call my assistant? We'll get a meeting set up, that sort of thing. That's where the idea of an elevator pitch started, okay? And I've heard them called elevator speeches, elevator pitches. I went to a conference in Toronto a couple years ago, and they actually had a large freight elevator with benches set up. And people took a number, entrepreneurs took a number and stood in line for the opportunity, the pleasure of getting on that elevator and spending a minute going up with the investors and a minute coming back down. Okay. And literally it was in an elevator. So the whole idea of your elevator pitch is just to get a conversation started. Okay.
And so doing a good elevator pitch, it's not something you have memorized and read back as though you have it memorized. It means you, in a very comfortable way, can talk very briefly about what you're doing. And, you know, I've met people who try and do an elevator pitch, and it's like I turned on the tape recorder, and they did their tape, and then it gets turned up. She does that well. You don't want to do that. Remember, it's what you present, it's how you present, it's how people perceive you. And you're trying to give people a little bit of information because you're trying to let them know who you are and what you're doing. You're not selling. You're not raising capital. You're not ambushing people. And so how you go about it really matters.
Yep.
But doing it well takes practice.
So you want to be brief. You want to grab attention. You want to give a little bit about what you do, what the benefits are of your solution, who, meaning what's the profile of customer that you work with. So we sell to the enterprise, or we have a mobile app that is used by millennials in this age group to do X, Y, and Z. What you're trying to do is communicate enough information so that hopefully the listener will say, well, that sounds interesting. Is this sort of like this? Or are you really getting to them at the right time to create a buying decision? You're trying to get the listener to ask you some questions about what you're doing. It's part of your qualification process of the listener, regardless of who they are.
And saying less is more. You do not have to tell people your entire life story. You do not have to tell people every single detail about the company. You need to tell people things that they will remember, that are impactful, and that will raise people's level of interest.
Can your grandmother understand what you do? This is a good way to level set with a person you've just met. So if I explain to my grandmother what I did, would she understand it? So the grandmother test is really important for the very first step in meeting somebody at a meetup, okay? So think about your grandmother, whether or not she would understand exactly what you're doing, okay? You want to put this in terms, basic terms for the listener initially to get an understanding of where they are and how much information that you need to provide is additional.
So we're a web-enabled, high-performance app, you know, targeted at millennials. We're in stealth mode. Right. Okay, what have I told you? Absolutely nothing. You know, when you talk to people in real terms. You know, I meet too many people who talk in industry jargon. Make it real. Make it real. I mean, maybe you know all those terms and that's great, but put it in terminology that human beings can understand. You will resonate better. It'll feel much more personal. You'll get a much better reaction from your grandmother and from whoever else you're talking to.
So if you structure your one-minute elevator pitch, again, this is conversational, but these are sort of the key elements that you want to include in your one-minute elevator pitch. They don't all need to be there, but I think that if your purpose is to interest somebody, start a conversation, maybe eventually get to a second meeting, you're going to want to initially factor all these things into your elevator pitch. And again, as John said, it's not something that you're going to necessarily memorize and have it sort of regurgitated out like, you know, your lines in a play, for example. But you're trying to give people context about who your company is, who your target customers are, what category of company you have. Are you a mobile company, an enterprise software company, communications company? Who are your target users? How do they benefit? You know, that sort of thing. This is a lot of information to put in a one-minute elevator pitch. And I'm not necessarily saying you have to have all of them, but you definitely have to have the first four or five of those so people get a sense of what you're doing.
Part of what you need to be thinking about is what you want to lead with. All right, this goes for every kind of presentation you make. So Michelle and I worked with an entrepreneur in Brazil. She won't remember who it is, so I won't ask her. And he had 5 minutes. He took the first 10 to talk about his life story. Okay, well, that was a mistake. But it wasn't until you got to the end of the presentation you found out the company had $1 million in revenue. Well, why didn't he say that up front? If you have the world's best team, you know, people who have won, you know, awards for their technology or worked at very prestigious universities or institutions, whatever, talk about that. Lead with something that's going to be positive. You know, I'd love to tell you about my company. You know, one of the things that I love about our company is there are 4 experts in the world who understand this technology. 3 of them work for our company and one's an advisor. I'm going to pay attention to what you say next. So thinking about what you say, the order you say it in really matters. And for all the conversation we're going to have about how do you do an elevator pitch, how do you do an investor pitch, crafting it so it reflects you, reflects your company, reflects your strengths is the hard part.
The other thing I will add is in Silicon Valley, we have super short attention spans, okay? So if I can't grab your attention in 10, 20, or 30 seconds, you're probably going to space out and go, oh my gosh, I wish this guy would just stop talking so I can go get another glass of wine, you know? So the point is you have to be compelling and impactful early on in the conversation.
But credible too.
But credible, yes. Okay. But culturally, in a lot of other parts of the world, it's very common to save the best news for last. Okay. And this is what John was saying. This company, yes, I know which one it is, but you know, he saved basically that last piece of news that he was doing $1 million in annual revenue for the end of the presentation. And by that point in time, we'd listen to him go blah, blah, blah for 10 minutes and we were bored to death. So here in Silicon Valley, when you get asked a question, you should answer the question with yes or no, and then the explanation. Okay. In most other cultures of the world, it's the explanation and then the answer, yes or no. Okay. Here, because we have such a short attention span, you want to hit them with stuff that's impactful. So I'm going to tell you about my company that does X, Y, and Z. Right now, we have about $1 million in annual run rate revenue. Not easy for me to say. And I want to share with you why we're growing at 20% per annum or something. So you want to come to them with information that grabs their attention initially, not save the best for last, right?
Yep.
Okay. So what about the informational pitch?
Okay. So sometimes people want to know more about what you're doing. And the purpose of the informational meeting is to get another meeting. It's as simple as that. So again, you don't have forever to tell people everything, but you need to give them more information. You know, very often this will be something that you give where you have 3 to 5 minutes to give a presentation, either at a formal event or an informal event. And you need to be able to tell people, again, what's important, thinking about what it is you say and the order of information that you convey it.
How many of you guys have been to pitch events, demo days here in Silicon Valley? So that's basically that 3-minute pitch is an informational pitch. It is easier to do a 5-minute pitch than a 3-minute pitch, okay? Because a 3-minute pitch forces you to really just focus on the utter essentials of the business. And a 3-minute pitch is easier to do than a 2-minute pitch. We call a 2-minute pitch kind of an extended elevator pitch. You know, so there's different kinds, but this is basically trying to get people interested so you can get the next meeting.
Right. Again, you're not going to have the time to tell people everything. You have to be selective. You're selective based upon the business, your key strengths, and part of it being your objective and the other part being the audience.
Okay. The investor pitch.
So investor pitches. When you go in to meet an investor, guess what? You're asking for money. So don't be shy about asking them for money. You know, I've had people say, oh, well, you know, I just want to meet a venture capitalist because they're so smart and so well connected. Okay, yeah, they are. But their business is actually to invest money. So you're going in, you're making a presentation, and you're looking for money. Doesn't necessarily mean they're going to give you the money. They may say no. And I will tell you the probability is really high that the answer you're going to get from any individual VC is no. But when they don't give you money, they're going to give you feedback. And that feedback is incredibly valuable for you because guess what? Your investor pitch, your informational pitch, your elevator pitch, you're constantly refining it. When I was raising money, after every presentation, I made changes to it based on what I was hearing, the feedback I was getting. You need to be doing that all the time. And the purpose of an investor pitch is for the next meeting, because nobody that I know, a professional investor or even most angel investors, are going to write you a check on the spot. So you want them to take your meeting, love what you're doing, and then have a follow-on meeting or process. Right? They're going to be doing due diligence. They want you to meet other partners. They want to talk to some of your customers. They want a more detailed dive into your business. Those are all good things. Okay, so we often get asked, so what are the right slides to do and what's the right order? Well, here's a sample of something that works. But again, I'm going to give you the caveat that it depends upon your business. How you structure the story, order you put things in, depends upon you, the company. If you've got the world's best team, talk about the best team up front. If you've got significant revenue, at least mention it up front. The point is, in a full investor presentation, you should be covering all of the information that's here. Varying level of details, again, depending upon the business, the stage of development you're at. I mean, if you're a really, really early stage company, spending 20 minutes talking about financials is not a good use of your time, because guess what? They are projections that may or may not have a basis in reality.
So cover slide, use the time before you're actually presenting to make sure that the real estate on your slide covers a little bit about who you are and what you do. So your tagline, a description of the company. Always put your contact information on your first slide. You'd be surprised at how many presentations that we look at that don't have this information. When you're talking about the problem, it's all about economic terms. How painful is this to the customer on the basis of how much time, money, or hassle they're experiencing with their current solution?
Okay. And one of the problems that people often say is, well, my customers, they, you know, some are bigger, some are small. So take a typical customer.
Right.
You know, a typical customer. We have customers who have somewhere between 1,000 employees and 10,000 employees. But for our typical customer, which has 5,000 employees, let me tell you how their problem plays out in terms of their annual cost they incur from this issue.
Right. So when you're talking about your solution, it's also about the value to the customer. So you remember I told you about our customer and how much they're losing every year with the fact that they don't have a solution in place. So when they put our solution in place, we're helping to eliminate those losses on a regular basis. So you're trying to tie your solution and your problem together very closely and keep it in economic terms.
Next is the market. Who's the market? How large is it? And it's okay to wave your arms and talk about how big the overall market is, but then talk about who your initial target market is. So the overall market is $500 million. Initially, we are targeting companies who are, you know, in high-tech manufacturing, who have between 1 and 5 physical plants and located in the U.S. And that market size is this, right? You can talk about the big market, you can talk about the big market potential, but then you're making it very clear who you're going after first.
So distribution means how you're going to go to market, how to get your product to market, what are the channels that you're going to use, whether it be a lower value product that's going to be sold online or if it's a high value product where you need a direct sales force. How are you going to service those customers once they do buy the product? How are you going to support them? Most customers, if they're based here in the U.S., they want some sort, they have certain expectations about 7x24 support, how they can get access to information, questions asked, that sort of thing. So you've got to be addressing those in your overall go-to-market strategy. It just does not mean selling to the customer. It means service and support afterwards.
Business model, we already talked about that a little bit. How do you make money? And conveying that in ways that work and highlight your company is important. So if you charge monthly, talk about annual revenue. If you're selling on a per transaction or per employee basis, tell me what your typical customer, what that annual revenue looks like. It helps me understand the business, helps me understand the economics, helps me understand how many customers do you have to get to be a big business? Because again, remember, as an investor, that's what I care about. I'm looking at, what does it take for you to grow to be a large, successful business?
So when you get down to competition, you're not going to have time to put your, and we hope you won't do this, is put your chart of product feature comparisons up for anybody to see about your competition. We don't want to see that you have 3 and they have 2, for example. What we're trying to understand is make sure that you, as the presenter, understand your market and your competition, and that you understand your differentiation against that those competitors so that you're able to articulate how we do it differently, and why it's better. And in a 5-minute presentation using a 10-slide format, you don't have a lot of time to spend on your competition. So mentioning 20 competitors by name or putting up the 2x2 graph or something like that, it doesn't make a lot of sense to do that, okay? We want to know you understand the market, understand your competition, and understand your differentiation.
Who are the key people in the company? You know, why do they have the, what is their relevant background? What is that relevant background? You know, we encourage people in presentations show logos. And the question you should be asking is this the right team for the company at its current stage? You know, we've seen companies who, you know, are still developing product and they have a full-time CFO and they have a salesperson. And you look and say, well, wait a minute, why do you have all these people? There's nothing to sell yet. You know, why do you have a full-time CFO? You can probably use somebody who's going to do it on a part-time basis. So making sure we understand the team, we understand the relevant experience and background on the team, and make sure it's the right team for the company's current stage of development.
So, John, what's some of your favorite words?
So money is my favorite word, right? I used to be an investor.
That's his daughter's favorite word.
But milestones is actually my second favorite word. And why do I care so much about milestones? Because milestones tell me that you thought about the steps that you are making to build your business and to increase the value of what it is you're doing, lower the risk, and move the business forward. And as an investor, I'm going to put money in a company. I'm going to put money in a company that I'm comfortable with, that I believe in the person, that I believe that in the product, that I believe that the company can do the things they say they're going to do. And milestones is a great way to convey that information to an investor.
On the financials, we're basically looking for how big of an organization are you going to be? How fast are you going to grow? How much cash do you need? And what are sort of the key assumptions that underline that plan? So how are you going to staff? How are you going to hire? What are your marketing costs, your sales costs, et cetera? We're trying to understand sort of the top line financials on the business.
Right. And the simple reality is if you're just starting, you're not going to have a lot of visibility. So I care much more about the key assumptions. You know, how long do you think it's going to take to close a customer? And what's the average revenue you're going to generate from a customer? And is this going to be ultimately a $1 million a year business, a $10 million a year business, a $100 million business? I'm trying to understand orders of magnitude, what the business looks like. So if you spend an enormous amount of time doing detailed financials for projecting what the company is doing over the next 10 years, it's probably not a good use of your time. If, on the other hand, you have no idea what you can achieve, what the profitability of the business could be, what the general economics look like, then you are less likely to have anybody willing to invest in you other than your mom and dad and maybe your grandmother.
So the most important thing, though, is you need to communicate what your key assumptions are. So when you start talking numbers, you're saying, I assume it's going to have a 6-month sales cycle, our average ticket's going to be this, et cetera. You need to be communicating those assumptions.
When you present, be thoughtful. Every word matters. Saying less really works to your benefit, and making sure you hit the words that will resonate with an investor are really critical.
How many of you guys are nervous when you present? So my guidance to you is this, is when you get up on stage, just remember, you know more about your business than anybody else does, okay? So that gives you a little bit of confidence. The second thing is, you know, find your positioning. Take a minute to find people in the audience that you're going to look at. Pause, okay? Breathe and pause so that you can communicate subtly your confidence to the group. And then how you say things is important as what you say. So you can use your voice, your tone, and your inflection to reinforce certain words. Or conversely, you can use soft tones, silence, and other things like that to reinforce important points in your presentation.
The other thing you can do is you can pause, because when you pause, people then actually stop doing whatever they're doing because people are nervous when the things are quiet, and they look up and they will actually listen. Or there are times that I will tell people, you need to remember this, and then I will say it again. And sometimes that emphasis is good.
So the reinforcement of points, there's one thing you want your audience to take away from your presentation. You can say in the very beginning of your presentation, I'm going to give you one really important point that I want you to take away from this presentation. Then I get to the point, and this is the most important point you should take away from this presentation. At the very end, thank you very much for having us here. We really appreciate it. And don't forget, the most important point you can take away from this presentation is this. What you did is you reinforced it three times in the listener's mind. And suddenly they're like, wow, that is important. I got to remember that. I can't forget that. Okay. So if you want somebody to take away one thing, give it to them three different times. Tell them what you're going to tell them. Tell them, and then tell them what you told them, okay? It's a very common sort of educational reinforcement learning technique that we use, but you use it in your presentation too.
So we talk about it being over in 30 seconds. It's not 30 seconds, it's 10. The first impression you make will be the last impression you make.
So you think it happens in less than 30 seconds?
Yes.
Okay. Is anybody still listening out there? You guys know what KISS is, right? Keep it simple, stupid. Okay? That means don't make your presentation overly complex. Don't make your slides overly complex. Don't talk at the 50,000-foot level with a lot of jargon, terminology that people don't understand. Okay? We want to make sure that they grok what we're saying as quickly as possible. So keep it simple.
And sometimes the best businesses are actually very simple. They really are. And when you can say to somebody, look, you know, our business is actually very simple. It turns out we figured out how to do it. Nobody else has done it. We've got some proprietary ways of doing it. We know it works because we have people using it.
And we're making $2 million a year.
That's actually a really good story. So don't feel you have to overcomplicate the business if it's actually simple. People like simple businesses. So very often people start talking about their product or their business, and I have no idea what they're talking about. I completely no understanding. I'm trying to understand, why is there a need? As an example, we're coaching a group of companies from Brazil, and they were talking about how they're selling to the LATAM insurance market. And we were trying to understand because something didn't make sense. And finally, in the course of talking with them, we understood that most people don't have car insurance.
In Brazil. Because it's really, really expensive.
And actually throughout all of Latin America. Now, here in the U.S., you have to have car insurance. Do not pass go. You go directly to jail, right? You don't have car insurance. You're in trouble here. Not the case in other parts of the world. And unfortunately, in this case, the company was talking to an international audience in addition to ourselves. And so most people didn't know that. And giving that context, the background, was really, really critical, because otherwise you looked and said, well, why is there even a business here? So sometimes you need, as much as you understand about your business and your market, you need to give your pitch to somebody else and then ask them, have I missed something? Because sometimes your experience base and what you know is not what other people necessarily know. The other thing we always do is say, you know, give me a typical customer problem. Give me an example of a customer who has this problem. It's much easier when you give me an example. It helps me understand better. And the other thing is, you know, how and when the product is used. We've met a company, and Michelle and I got an executive summary. And for the life of us, we could not figure out. So this sounds like a really cool technology, but when would you use it? How would you use it? Why would you use it? And so giving a little bit more understanding helps us understand what it is, why somebody's going to use it, and why there's a good business opportunity. So when Michelle and I were updating our presentation, because like all of you who are doing investor pitches, you, after every pitch, you're going to update it. So every time we do this presentation, we update it. And as I said to Michelle, I was going to...
He's trying to read my mind right
now. Uber for PowerPoint was what I was going to do. In other words, I was going to email it to her. Now, if I told you that I had a great business doing Uber for PowerPoint and I really had email, that would probably be a really bad analogy. And yet we have people all the time who are talking about the Uber of, the Airbnb. And sometimes an analogy, sometimes an example is a great example, and sometimes it's just really bad. So really be thoughtful about the examples you use, the analogies you use.
So we met a company from a bunch of Danes here in
she
Silicon Valley.
She thinks I know what company she's talking
no,
about.
No, I'm not. I just, a bunch of Danes here. And when the guy gave us his, 30-second pitch, he says, basically, we're the Uber for security analyses. And so I said, okay, so you're on-demand security analyses for companies that just got hacked or something like that. He goes, yeah. I said, so why do you use the name, the words, the analogy Uber for? Well, people get it. I said, but it sounds stupid. I mean, Uber is consumer. You go in and you deal with a company after they've got a hack. You do an assessment and analysis. So they really, more often than not, it will hurt you to use those analogies. So I would recommend against using those analogies and use words like on demand, immediate, whatever it is that makes sense for your business. You got to be memorable. You got to connect with people. And when you're in front of a group, you've got to make eye contact with people that you care about, that you want to get connected to, that you want to talk to further. It's your job to find two or three anchor points in the room and look at them regularly. And Robson's been one of my anchors on the left side of the room all morning. You need to make eye contact. People want to feel you're connecting with them, that you're listening to them, that you want to see whether or not they're engaged. Are they following what you're saying? So making eye contact is really important. Being memorable is important. John tends to use a handheld mic and stands here. I tend to use my hands and talk, which is why I can't use a handheld mic. But we have different styles of approaching how we do a presentation, okay? So find your anchors, look at them, follow them. Don't talk too quickly. I have, on more than one occasion, had an entrepreneur say, I can get through 20 slides in 5 minutes, no problem. Think about, you have 5 minutes, how many slides you are going to have to think about seeing and processing, let alone how fast that entrepreneur is going to be talking, okay? So you don't want to be talking quickly. You want your points to be reinforced. You've got to basically watch yourself and pace yourself in relation to what you see your audience doing. So you can't talk too quickly.
And so going through slides, clicking through slides really quickly is very disconcerting.
It's very distracting.
It's very uncomfortable for people in the audience. They can't follow, they don't enjoy it.
They've only got one choice, really. They can either look at the slides or listen to you. What do you want them to do? You're the star of the show. They should be listening to you, watching you, following you. Yes, you're going to have a chance to read the slides, but if there's too much crap up there or you're cycling through them too quickly, they cannot process. Okay, so it's about pacing yourself and allowing your audience to absorb what you're saying.
And so one of the points here is demonstrate your passion. We've met entrepreneurs who are so nervous, so unrehearsed that they've memorized their presentation. Doesn't work. It does not work. And it's uncomfortable. I know, we work with entrepreneurs all the time where English is a second or third language for them, but you've got to practice it because reading it, having it memorized really doesn't work because it feels really flat. And you might as well just Uber the presentation to somebody and just include a voice memo on it. That's it. Right? Because they're not getting anything. The presentation is not only about the content. It's about you and understanding who you are. Because when somebody invests, it's like a marriage. And there are good marriages and bad marriages. And in the case of an investor, they're investing for the long haul. And there is no such thing as divorce other than firing you. So, it's part of the get to know who you are.
So the process of you guys listening to a presentation is you want to like your presenters, okay? So think about yourself up here. You want your audience to like you, okay? So you've got to be warm. You've got to be engaging. You can inject humor when it makes sense. You want your audience to like you. So you've got to be yourself, and you've got to not take yourself too seriously. You're all going to make mistakes. You're all going to be scared shitless during your presentations. I used to get nauseous doing this. And one day I woke up and was presenting in front of 500 people in Mexico in Spanish, which is my second language. So I still get nervous presenting in Spanish. And I've been speaking Spanish for a long time. But I just suddenly realized that I wasn't nervous anymore. And so eventually you learn your stuff. You get comfortable with the fact that you have butterflies in your stomach. Whatever it is, you just have to accept it as part of the process. But being warm, being genuine is really, really important. the last part of this is you got to practice, okay? You have to do your presentation in advance. You got to let it settle. You got to think about it for a few days, sometimes a few weeks. You have to get other people giving you feedback on your presentation, whether or not it makes sense, how the slides look, are they too complicated? Then let me stand up and give you my presentation and see what you think. Critique me, give me some feedback. I want to hear from you how I sound when I do my presentation. So if I had a 5-minute presentation to give to somebody next Friday, I probably would have started my presentation a couple weeks ago, thinking about what I'm going to do. I would figure out who my review board is to help me be more effective in my presentation, and then I would rehearse it. The one thing I will give you on rehearsals is if you have to do a presentation tomorrow morning, do not spend all night rehearsing your presentation. After about 90 minutes or 2 hours, it doesn't work anymore. So you do 90 minutes or 2 hours of rehearsal, then you walk away from it and you come back to it later. Because how it sinks in, it takes time. You can't just cram for an exam, okay? You can't cram for a presentation and come across as credible, genuine, and passionate without having the time to let this sink in.
And so I'm going to emphasize one thing, that being memorable. Being memorable works two ways. And I met an entrepreneur once who got up and in the first 30 seconds made an ass of himself. And, you know, he presented a really interesting and compelling business. And if I were investing, I would never invest in that company, in him. You know, Shakespeare says you're remembered for your entrances and your exits. And that's something good to remember.
Okay, so you are your presentation. If you show up to an investor presentation in shorts and flip-flops, you know, that may
appeal.
Then you're
Dave McClure.
That may appeal to Dave McClure at 500 Startups, but that won't necessarily appeal to your investors. You need to try to stand still. I can't stand still, okay? So that's why I walk. But you got to try to stand still and be semi-relaxed in your presentation so people don't have to follow you all over the stage. And I've watched people that do this the whole time. They're doing this during the presentation. And if that is not freaking irritating, I don't know what is, okay?
Moving around, right? Because people are very nervous. And it's okay to be nervous, but how you are nervous, how you show it, you know, bite your tongue, you know, put your fingers together, you know, do things that will deal with that nervous energy, but don't show it to the people you're presenting.
Don't distract your audience, okay? And don't be unnecessarily, you know, hyped up and moving too much and things like that. Know your stuff, know your content. Know where you want to use your voice. Know where you want to use silence. Know where you want to use certain audio techniques to reinforce your message. And then make sure you're connecting with your audience so that you're looking at faces, looking at eyes, and making sure people know that the audience knows that you're interested in communicating with them.
Keep it simple. We've already talked about this a little bit. You know, don't make it hard for people to understand. Do the math. Make it easy for people to understand what it is you're doing, understand why this is a good business opportunity, present the numbers that are going to be most compelling when you're presenting your business case, and then think about how you tell it in an interesting and compelling way. Maybe the business ultimately is a boring business. It doesn't mean that your story about the business is boring. It turns out you've got a really boring business and you make a lot of money. And people want to buy your product, and as quickly as they see it, they want to buy your product. That's interesting and compelling in its own right. And it doesn't necessarily talk about great technology or great product, but you've got a great business.
So once you get down through the business fundamentals and you figure out what your script is, you know, your slide should be branded, your logo should be on it, and it's better to spend time with the company logo and the company branding than it is with the product branding, at least in the beginning with smaller companies.
And I've seen too many companies who introduce their product name and it's just confusing.
Or we thought the product name was the company name.
Right.
Because it...
Right. And, yeah. And it's just confusing, and it's at the stage of, you know, early stage company. Don't make it hard for people to understand what you're doing. Talk about your company. That's all that people care about. How you label it, how you brand it for your particular customer, talk about that some other time.
Okay, when you get to the Q&A session, you're still not done. Okay, this is a really important part of your presentation, and we've seen a lot of companies just really screw up their presentation and erode the credibility that they built during their presentation because they were not prepared for the Q&A session.
And so I have a long and successful track record of taking people down a rat hole. People would come and make presentations to me, and you know, they'd get to slide number one, and I would ask a question. They never got to slide two. And part of it was I was asking questions, and that was good. But more importantly, they never took control of the meeting. And they could have said to me, shut up, I'm making my presentation. Probably not a good thing to say or do. They could have said, you know, you're raising some good questions and concerns. I'm actually going to address those a little later in the presentation. So if you don't mind, I'd like to hold that question until later. Or I can give you the simple answer now, and there's a more detailed explanation later in the presentation. You need to control the meeting. Because if you don't control it, somebody else will. And if I control the meeting, then I'm less likely to invest. You're less likely to get to the end of your presentation.
I hear a lot of investors, sometimes they ask a question of an entrepreneur and the entrepreneur will say, well, that's a really good question. And I think that's bullshit. I think what you should really be saying is thanks for asking that. Because sometimes the questions are not good. Sometimes they're designed to go down the rat hole. Sometimes they're designed to see how the entrepreneur can deal with a very complicated question that's not necessarily germane to what's going on. So I would just suggest you say thanks for asking that. And when you say thanks for asking, you're buying yourself just a bit of time to think about what your response is. And it gives you a chance to kind of reframe the question slightly. And so my understanding is that you're asking about whether or not A plus B equals C. Is that correct? You're still buying yourself time to think. And that's a completely normal, natural response. Your objective is to respond as crisp and as cleanly as possible, but reinforcing your key messages and not getting down a rat hole. So reframing the question sometimes helps.
And sometimes people will ask you a question and you really, they haven't asked quite the right question. There's probably a better question they could have asked. So let me tell you what you don't do. You don't say, that's really a stupid question and I'm not going to answer it. Doesn't quite work. You can say, the answer to that question is as follows, but I actually thought you were going to ask me a slightly different question, which was about this, this, and this. And it turns out the answer to that question is as follows. So you are acknowledging the question, you are giving an answer, it may be a short answer, but then you are bridging to the question that you believe is really more germane in a very nice, professional, respectful manner.
So culturally in Silicon Valley, we want to hear the yes or no answer first, and then the explanation. So you've got to get yourself in that mode of saying, yes, that is correct. And the reason for that is this. So you've got to be in the mode of answer first, explanation second.
Okay. And then, you know, when you don't know the answer, don't fake it. It doesn't work. It just doesn't work. Now, when somebody asks you a fundamental question that you should know and don't, you're actually in trouble. But you know, there's times that people ask you a question. They're asking you a question about, you know, something about your product or your revenue stream or something like that. It's okay to say, look, I don't have that answer right off the hand. I'd like to get back to you in an email with that answer. Or we haven't actually been able to calculate that yet. We're still trying to collect the information. I'd like to get back to you as soon as I have the answer to that question. But when people, you know, come up with answers that just don't make sense, guess what? Every investor you meet has seen 3 to 5 to 10 businesses just like yours over the last 3 to 6 months. It's the way the business works. And so when you're telling them something that doesn't make sense, you haven't done a good job of faking it. The investors are, they tend to be smart, but they also tend to be smart because they've seen a lot of the same kind of business.
Finally, at the end of the Q&A session, you want to end strong and you want to be able to say, you know, thank you very much. I appreciate all the questions. When you think about our company, think about X, okay? Boom, you just reinforced that one key point that you've been reinforcing throughout the whole presentation.
So we've talked a lot about the things you include in your business. And we haven't talked a lot about sort of other stuff. We are most concerned with the business fundamentals. If you're presenting a business where there aren't business fundamentals about, you know, product, customer, market, value proposition, everything else doesn't work. And so as we look at businesses and when people come to us for pitch coaching or help or feedback, we're first looking at the business fundamentals. It's critical. You know, the second thing we're looking at, do you have the appropriate content? Are you telling people information, compelling information that will help you in what you're trying to achieve? Raising capital, getting a customer, whatever that is. The third piece is important. Your presentation style, your personality, and your passion. But as you think about building your business, if all you have is personality and passion, you have about one chance in a million of getting invested. There are investors who don't care what your business is. They're investing strictly in the person. They exist. But it's a small percentage of investors. Most investors really care about the business. And their first cut is going to be about what it is, the business is, making sure it makes sense, and making sure you've been able to convey it in a thoughtful and compelling way. Because what you present to an investor, I'm looking at that and saying, well, if you can't explain it to me, how are you going to sell a customer? It's as simple as that.
If we work with a company, we're going to go through all the things that we talked about earlier, the business fundamentals, and then we're going to try to help you understand how your pitch is going to resonate with investors. What words should you use? What should you avoid? Who should you target? People say, you know, I'm raising capital, but I need to get with investors, and they haven't necessarily put together a fundraising strategy. They haven't researched the type of investors that are investing in that particular sector. So the who to target is really important in your fundraising strategy. So you've got to be able to understand where and how you're going to target, how you're going to get to those people, and what are you going to say to them.
And that's our presentation.
You guys, thank you very much.